Mr. Jewett, reel 5. You chose the seamanship branch, Mr. Jewett. Can you tell me the training that they gave you in that branch?
Yes, the seamanship branch of the Navy is really the executive branch. It's the real branch of the Royal Navy. The others were really supernumerary. And, of course, embracing that branch was seamanship in the first instance, but you were either in... You could branch out when you were an adult sailor, a proper sailor, when you were 18. You could branch out into either torpedoes, a torpedoman, or you could go into gunnery. I said, no, the fast track, of course, was gunnery, and that was the one I chose. Now, you got an extremely good grounding at HMS Ganges. Seamanship, every conceivable knot and splice was taught in depth in the seamanship line, and there are quite a lot. Not many people can tell you how many sails and ropes there are on a ship, I can tell you now. And also, not just that, but also boxing the compass and knowing how to steer a ship. Being a coxswain of a boat, boys became qualified coxswains and very, very adept as well. They had we had our own regattas. We didn't particularly in my spell there, but they did have regattas at Shotley. The other half of it, of course, well, there were two halves. The other half of it was gunnery. Of course, there was PT side, but nobody was interested in that. The gunnery side, where you were taken down to what was known as the heavy gun battery. And they had a battery of about six-inch guns. And each boy was taught gun drill. And I mean taught. Everybody used to have to change rounds. I mean, in a gun's crew, you number, the gunnery instructor would number the crew, the boys, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc. And then after they'd done it for so time, laid a few rounds and fired a few rounds off. Not really fired them, but fired them in sort of principle. He would say change rounds, and then number 1 become number 2, number 10 would become number 1, and so forth, and they change round all the time. So everybody got a go at being a sight setter, a loader, a breech loader, gun layer, gun trainer, etc., captain of the gun, etc. Everybody would have a turn of it, and these boys were extremely well trained. But not only were they trained that way, it also taught them discipline, because discipline is so imperative in wartime. You've got to do things without thinking. And they knew that. And the Admiralty were... it was a well-thought-out course. And you became men very quickly because of this. And I had never come across it. And not only that, there was the parade ground training. Boys could learn to do what they call close-column wheel. You see that in the troop and the colour. The band pivoting round on a... The boys at Shotley are taught to do a close column wheel and taught to do all kinds of parade ground manoeuvres. and with a field gun, particularly with a field gun, because one hilarious thing happened when the government, when I was one of the first people who had to take charge of captain of the field gun. Now, the field gun, it was a replica of the field gun from Victorian times. And what happened was that the captain of the field gun, and the field gun has a crew of about, oh, I can't remember the exact number now, but it was on the drag ropes. They had these drag ropes, and they ran around all over the place with the field gun carrying this. And the instructor would be about 100 yards away, and he'd blow his whistle, and he'd give an order. And right take ground, which meant the captain of the gun, he had to turn the... Or left take ground, he had to take the wheel. And the other one was... form the order to march. Now, it was quite funny. Before the field gun stands, the drag ropes are laying down. I didn't quite hear the order. And I thought, and I was captain of the gun this time. And Shotley parade ground is quite a big parade ground with a mast at the end of it, the famous masts at the end of it. And it's rather funny because the order properly was, in English, form the order to march. And I thought that the instructor had said, fall in under the mast. I said, with my, I said, and I had pretty good ears, but it wasn't sort of said like that. He said, "Fully or not?" That's the sort of thing you would hear, and I interpreted it. Well, I gave this falling under the mast, and the whole guns crew promptly doubled away smartly and fell in front of the mast, after astonishment, and everybody else is after astonishment, and. Jerry Fletcher, the GI, was so funny. He was aghast. What happened there? I thought, when looking back on it, it was so funny. But of course, all these orders in gunnery and training things, that you have to get to know them. They aren't really the King's BBC diction. I can tell you that. And that was an extremely funny incident that happened to me at Shotley. But I lived it down, fortunately, as I said, because I was a member of the boxing team, and I didn't need to say too much. But there you go. They're looking back on those happy memories. Yes, Shotley was a tough place, extremely tough. Yeah, but it was not an unhappy place. The boys had enormous. The greatest enemy, of course, was a fellow called a Royal Marine called Creeping Jesus. Creeping Jesus, I remember, was the man who used to, because you weren't allowed to smoke, and I don't know if I told you the punishment for smoking, but it was pretty heavy. And Creeping Jesus, the boys always used to slip away to the heads to have what they called a drag. And a cigarette, by the way, cost tuppence, which was an enormous amount of money in those days, if you could smuggle a cigarette. Well, Creeping Jesus was a Royal Marine, and he used to see the smoke coming out the top of him. He used to go in straight and nab them red-handed. Of course, these kids weren't criminals, and they weren't criminally minded. Of course, they got caught every time they went for a drag. But yes, they weren't unhappy. In fact, to this very day, I don't think I've ever tasted anything like Shotley's plum duff. I think it was absolutely fantastic. Those happy days.
Did they send regular reports to your parents?
No.
How you getting on?
No, they didn't send any reports to your parents, but I think it worked in a negative fashion. I think they probably did if you got into trouble. I don't think they're... I think no news is good news, or sort of thing, as far as I could see. But as I told you, it was quite a mixture. You had all kinds of kids at Shotley. You had kids from extremely good middle-class homes. You also had waifs and strays, and people from Dr. Bernardo's and places like that. And people like myself, I said, I wasn't a waif or stray, and I wasn't from a middle-class home. I was from a good working-class home, but not what I would call a middle-class home, where my father was a civil servant or a captain in the Royal Navy or anything like that. I said, but that's the sort of kids you actually got, because, strangely enough, later in life I found it. I met a chap in the Navy who was an able seaman, and his father was a captain. And he was a very well-spoken lad. And I said, well, what on earth? I think I was a killick, or I was a PO, sorry, I was on Leander. And I said, what on earth are you doing? I said, you people, you couldn't pass the exams. So it was as simple as that. You know, you did get all kinds of people in the services, in peacetime, and in the peacetimes. Yeah, so we got to... That's about all I can tell you, really, about
did they keep you away from the general seamen there?
Oh, there weren't any. The truth is, Shotley, there was about 2,500 boys there when I was there. Well over 2,000 anyway. And it was quite a big outfit. But the only adult seamen that were there, or adults that were there, were the two instructors. That was the chief and the PO, and... The boys, that's the mess instructors. They had their own instructors right the way through your time at Shotley, and those able seamen that worked served in the chiefs and petty officers' messes, because chiefs and POs have their own messmen and they to wait on them, and that's the only. But they never ever came in contact with the boys. It was completely boys' own. The boys established their own pecking order, but there wasn't really a pecking order, because in a mess such as mine, the mess I was in, there were quite a few lads who were quite hard cases, so there was no real top dog. There was no There was no sort of gang or clique of hard. There was none of that. So and boys quickly learned, even the little ones, because there were. I remember little Bartholomew. His name was Bartholomew. He was a little chap, but he could give a good account of himself. You know, you didn't bully. You might pull some fast ones if you could, but you didn't bully. There was no bullying in the true sense of the word.
Whilst you were a boy, the 6 weeks I think you said you were there.
No, I was there for about nearly 9 months, actually. Well, eight months. Oh, no, at Shotley Edit Hole, yeah. I'm talking about Shotley as a whole, yes. I'm talking about the real, in the annex, you didn't do all... what I've just told you was not in the annex, that was just sort of marching about until you all went to your mess over in the main barracks. I was in Blake Division, actually, in what they call the short covered way.
How long were you in the annex?
Oh, 6 weeks. Yes, I was 6 weeks in the annex. Yeah, and then you all went. Then you got sent to your mess, and my mess was in number 8 mess in Blake Division, and that was the short covered way. They called it the short covered way because it was covered. The way was as it's flat, and the quarter deck was at the top of the covered way where the flag was. But when you went into the mess, it was those messes were immaculate. Well, it had to be, by golly, the time that you could see your face in those floors and that. Everything was really beautifully kept.
And were these brick-built buildings?
No, they were, well, I don't know if they were brick or not. They were like Nissen huts, sort of, but cross between a Nissen hut and a Romney hut. That's as far as I can remember. And but they'd been there from here dot, to about 1923 or something, they'd been there, so they were pretty permanent, you know. In the boys' mess at Shotley, there was a great sense of pride, because apart from each of us having to go over the mast now and again, and everybody liked to get over there quickly, you had to be the guard. You had to the guard for divisions, and that meant, of course, bayonets and everything, because you were taught to fix bayonets and all the rest of it, you know. And these boys were so proud, and all your boots were balled up, you know, everything was very sparkling, just like a guardsman. Everything was perfect, and you got inspected by the CO and everything, and the divisional officer. You had to come round, and it was all very, very ceremonial, much as you would see only in probably the highest place, as in the troop in the colour, with the officer with his sword and everything. He used to come round, and any poor boy that was caught not exactly right, but there weren't many, believe you me, because the boys used to spend a long time getting ready for the guard, you know, for the guard for divisions, and that was used to come round to a mess. I don't know how often, but we got one anyway. So it was quite a nice thing.
So the annex was the first 6 weeks.
That's right. The annex was. Then you go to the main barracks. And you were then part of it. And
the process, presumably, of keeping your barracks clean was very much the same as you'd been taught.
Absolutely, exactly the same. Polishing the floor and all the rest of it. They didn't have to go through it all again, but all your blankets were in absolutely apple, you know, to a fraction of an inch, and, you know, everything was perfectly laid out.
Was it the same group of boys with you?
Yes, the same. They kept the same lads, yes, the same lads. We went right through.
And did they keep the same instructors, or had they?
Yes, the same instructors. We had the same instructors from the day we went across until we met, or they met us, Dodger Long and Jerry Fletcher, and we went across. Now, whether that was general practice, I don't know, because it may not have been. But in actual fact, that was the way it was. It happened with us, actually. They brought this, took us across there.
Had the discipline now come that little bit more stronger than it had been in the annex for you?
It was
a change in discipline.
Yes, well, in the annex, it was a sort of a shock treatment. I think everybody's really terrified. It was all right for the ship boys, but people like me who hadn't a clue. But you fall into it. And the discipline, you didn't notice it. It was that you didn't notice the strict discipline that there was. I mean, lights out. I forgot what time lights were out. They were pretty early, about 8 o'clock or something. And everybody used to talk and used to be in bed, you know, because the instructors watched you from morning to night. You were under surveillance, you know. And when lights out came, you had to be in bed, and the instructor was come round and he'd walk round and make damn sure you were in bed. And in the morning was the same. He was there, the duty instructor would come in and be standing, you know, wakey wakey. But Reveille would be on the bugle, of course, you know, and you'd hear Reveille in the morning.
And of course, now your training was within your choice, the gunnery, section that you, the gunnery branch that you were in.
No, all the boys had to do gunnery. There was no torpedo section. All the boys had that. I think it was more or less discipline. It was more for discipline. It was when you were towards the end of your, your training as a boy, that you made your mind up whether you, because what happened was, we haven't left Shotley, but at the, you pass out from Shotley, and you pass out and you go to a barracks. Now that was where we all split up, because there were three depots: Chatham, Portsmouth, and Devonport. Some boys who lived in the West Country went Devonport, South Country, Portsmouth, and sort of the East Country and the North Country all went to Chatham. Well, pretty well most of them went to Chatham, which was, in effect, I understand, was actually the oldest one. The Chatham was very, the Nor command. Now, when you went to Chatham, you went into the boys' mess at Chatham. You didn't go into the seamen's mess, you went into the boys' mess. But it was different, because as soon as you went to Chatham, you could smoke your head off. In fact, you could buy tins of what they called tickler. These tins of tickler, they cost about a shilling, I think, or half a pound of tickler. And these Rizzler, and you make your own. I mean, I can still make my own cigarettes from being a boy, but I don't smoke. I haven't smoked for God knows how long, I don't know, 40-odd years. But for these, you could smoke your head off as a boy. You could do anything you liked as a boy, but as you, Mark, mentioned just now, there was segregation between the boys and the adult. In fact, if what I think you're implying, was there any sort of attempts at sodomy or anything like that, well, it would be, I think, should imagine, almost a capital offence for a seaman in the Navy to have any, even if you touched a boy, it was taboo. You could not even touch a boy in the Navy, because it got back and you were court-martialed, you could say, well, goodbye to about 5 years of your life, you know, because it just was not permitted anyway. All the tales you hear of all this, the jokes, you know, about the bum boys and all that sort of thing, that is a joke, because I don't know about Nelson's Navy, but I know about the modern Navy that I was in. It was absolutely out of, because on a ship later on in life, on the Ashanti, one of the boys made a complaint, because he was, I'll give you an example, on a ship, he was going up a steel ladder, and boys go from the boys' mess deck to the washroom, and normally they do is put a towel around them and nothing else. And as he went up the towel, they had to go through the stoker's mess. Well, this stoker tapped him up, as the saying goes. Well, there was such a hoo-ha about that, you've got to believe it. And there was no. I can't tell you what the outcome was, but I shudder to think who the unfortunate or silly stoker was that chanced his arm with a boy, because it just wasn't worth a candle. I can tell you that from the point of view of a grown up.
So, in your experience, you never experienced this kind of thing.
Never,
the whole group.
No, never. No, not even a thought of it or suggestion of it at all. No.
So if we come back and essentially summarise, you would be still doing your drills where you were in the...
Once we left Shotley, the training was finished.
You
were a qualified boy.
Yeah, I'm talking now about your move from the annex into the main...
Shotley.
And you were doing your drills, as you're saying, and gunnery...
Gunnery, seamanship, and PT, a lot of PT, and climbing ropes. You see, you had to learn to climb ropes and things like that.
Who commanded the whole thing?
It was a commander. I think his name was Gotto.
Did you see much of him?
Not a lot, no. I only saw him on parade. No, we didn't. There was no... There was no sort of coming round the mess or anything. No, never saw him at all. In fact, he was about God, or even assistant God, perhaps, I don't know, but something like that. But no, they were miles away from us. Even the divisional officer was only... You went in front of the divisional officer, I think, every now and again, I can't tell you how often, and he would have a have a talk to you, you know, sort of, how are you getting on? That was each boy separately, you know, used to go and talk to him. But apart from that, and I think they could, sort of, they would obviously have to put in reports about you to their superiors, you see. The division officer, actually, was our division officer for Blake Division. I'm sure he was a lieutenant commander, actually, a 2.5 ringer. But that was the...
And in total, you were there about 9 months.
About nine, yes, actually, yes, from being a boy to going to sea, as they call it, you know, where you went to sea, actually. But normally, in peacetime, you would go to sea. But you've got to remember that in the meantime, their war had broken out in September, and we'd suddenly become, although we were peacetime careerists, we suddenly were now proverbial cannon fodder. Now it was a very different ball game. We were going into but we were still the largest navy in the world. The discipline, I mean, truthfully, the traditional things. Sailors used to, when they got a, for giving example, when they used to get a new collar. That's the collar that went round their neck, you know, with the three stripes, you know, Nelson's battle's three stripes. It was almost black when you got it, but they used to spend hours trying to get it white, so that it looked as if they'd had it for years, you see. they did these sort of things, and there were all sorts of little things that sailors do, which the public would never know about, such as the bows on their name strap of their caps, the ribbon on the name ribbon on their caps. They used to make those very, very pronounced and very sharp. And often they when they went ashore, they had it over the left ear. But as soon as they got ashore, they switched it round so it came over the left eye. All sorts of silly little things. And of course, Jolly Jack used to love to wear his hat at the back of his head, which of course was absolutely taboo. You know, you had to wear the pucker. Pucker sailor wore his cap, you know, horizontal. But these bits of lore, L-O-R-E, which are sort of, you learn, funnily enough, predominantly while you're at HMS Ganges. You learn all these things, you pick them all up from the shipboys and the instructors and the slang and all the rest of it.
You've mentioned some of the minor punishments, peeling potatoes and that kind of thing. What was the...
Jankers as well. You got jankers as well.
What was possibly the most severest punishment that a boy might get?
It ranged. Jankers, of course, was in itself... it could be pretty naughty. Doubling around a parade ground with an 8-pound, 10.5-ounce-inch rifle over your head, which is called enemy in sight in large numbers. Scouting movements were done with a rifle in the old days, and they were handed down. For example, holding your rifle over your head with your enemy in sight in large numbers like that was a signal to the main body that when you were a scout, that the main body, or enemy in sight in large numbers to the right number, shaking it up and down. That was the sort of thing. Now that was adopted for the GIs that used to take the punishment, and for the 10A or number 11s, whichever was they call it, on the parade ground for an hour each night. That was just 1 hour. But the other thing, of course, was peeling the spuds. That was when you were all off in your off-duty time. It wasn't very nice. But the severest punishment, of course, was corporal punishment. That was a stroke. That was the birch, and you got the strict 6 or 12 strokes of the birch. That was done very ceremoniously. It wasn't just sort of a question to bend over, same as you did at school, look, you know. It was a very different ball game. You were charged, of course, and you found guilty, smoking or whatever it was you did, you know, or belting somebody or fighting, whatever. And you were taken before the divisional officer, who would give you a punishment. And then you would assemble, and you'd have to have your duck suit on. And the duck suit, of course, was very tight round the trousers, you know, round your buttocks. And you were the medical officer was there, the MO was there, and the crusher, which is another name for a PO who was in the master at arms section, you know, he had a crown on his arm. He was a different discipline section of the Navy. He would be standing there, and you would bend over a bolt vaulting horse. Now the vaulting horse was a convenient height. and then he would administer ceremoniously the six cuts, which were now six cuts of the cane. Doesn't sound much, but you consider, like, first of all, the first way, it's all done in sort of in the atmosphere of it, and the first one and six cuts, and the intervals between, you know, and they're examined, you know, and then the next one goes on, whack. It takes quite a while to get those six cuts over with. It's not overdone very quickly. It's six, and that, of course, was, and probably it was somewhat sadistic, but I suppose some of the boys, they survived it. Some of them went in, they had the drags, and some of them went back for more. So, but that was often for attempting to run away. You know, if you run away, you're desertion. Of course, it was desertion, because you'd sign the, you'd agreed to become a continuous service. Funnily enough, all this boys' service may come as a surprise to you to know that it was never counted by the War Office as service. And I think that was absolutely unbelievable. I found out later that my service in the Navy only counted from the age of 18. Whilst I was at sea on two ships, on HMS Phoebe, which is a cruiser, and later the Ashanti, as a boys' sailor, I was only 17, that service did not count as service. I was fighting the Germans, you know, literally fighting the Germans. That didn't count. I was a boy. So there you are. What a crazy nation we are, I tell you. We're mad as March hares, I think, in this country.
Did you have silly punishments like painting rocks or stones or...
No. Well, I suppose we did, because I never got that. But I know that was in the army. They used to do that sort of thing. But I can't remember. That they used to have skirmishing parties. What they call we had to go around the barracks picking up all bits of paper and all that. That sort of thing, which of course wasn't really silly. It was sort of useful. It was kind of useful. I think they tried to make your punishment sort of useful. You know. I don't know if I told you about Rivali and going down to the hydro, the laundry, washing,
yes,
with laundry jar. I've told you about that. Yeah. But yes, the day, the boys' day at Shotley was quite adventurous, and the big day was when you went on leave. That was quite.
I'm just going to say the first 9 months. When did you get a leave?
Oh, after about, well, you got leave actually after about 3 months, I think it was. But the pay there was a shilling. I think I told you about the shilling a day and the Charlies and everything. You know, when you went on leave, you know, it was quite funny. Boys used to pretend that they were men, as boys always did. And we used to acquire, how we got them, I don't know, was these badges, these badges that the seamen, that the proper seamen used to wear, such as a gunnery badge. And you'd see a silly thing, you'd see a boy with a gunnery badge on on one arm, and a torpedo badge or something on the other. Absolutely crackers. But boys used to love to put these gold badges on. They used to sew them on in the train, you know. They wouldn't dare put them on. As soon as they got on the train to go on leave, they used to sew these badges on, put these badges on their arm, to make out that they'd have their good conduct badges on the wrong arm, and all sorts of weird, wonderful things. It was quite funny, really, looking back on it.